for being here, and if you'd give us 3 to 5 minutes of opening comments, we'd appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Good morning. I want to thank you first for the opportunity to even be considered as a regent for the University of Minnesota. I'm really thrilled to be here. My name is Pam Langseth, and I have lived for all but 4 years of my life in the Twin Cities, so I have a vast repertoire of where I've lived. As a 1981 grad of the University of Minnesota and the granddaughter, daughter, sister, wife, and mother of University of Minnesota grads, this institution has a very special place in my heart. Through the sights and sounds of Gopher Sports on WCCO radio and TV, walking campus as a young girl with my mom, meeting my husband on campus, graduating from the business school on a day in June when a tornado went over Northrop, attending football games at Memorial Stadium and basketball games in the barn, mentoring young women at a campus sorority, participating as a judge at the Minnesota Cup, working with CLA students on projects, raising funds for the Masonic Cancer Center, and last June having the privilege of watching my son walk across the stage as a graduate of the College of Science and Engineering. I've been privileged to experience this place in many, many ways, and it would be a privilege and honor to serve in this role. The University of Minnesota Business School prepared me to thrive for over 25 years in corporate and private business. My career began at Dayton Hudson, where I spent 18 years driving results, managing people as a senior buyer. I then leveraged those skills to develop new concept stores for undeveloped consumer segments for Best Buy. And finally, I brought them all together in service to a privately held company, a small company that was $30 million and 400 employees. It was in a growth mode. Currently, I'm a board member of a local small privately held company of over $120 million. And this experience has augmented my business experience through conversations regarding global currencies, product mix, employee ownership, company acquisitions, and more. All of these roles have provided me with the opportunity to hone skills in leadership, strategy, innovation, finance, and human resources in large corporate and small entrepreneurial businesses. Since leaving the business world in 2010, I decided I wanted to make a difference for kids in our community and sought to work with nonprofits that were focused on teens. I began my experience by leading a group called Social Venture Partners, which is an investment group of people who invest in organizations in terms of time and money to make a difference for those nonprofits so that they can positively impact more teens. This position provided me with a window to understand the issues that impact teens across our community, the breadth of programs that are trying to address these issues, and really an understanding of what the elements for success are for these organizations so that teens' lives actually do get better. Additionally, I have been and currently am a board member of organizations focused on teens, Breakthrough Twin Cities, Teach for America, and the Open Hands Foundation. And these roles have provided me with insight regarding issues facing disadvantaged teens and have solidified my belief that education is the key to a pathway out of poverty and crisis. So perhaps nowhere is my experience more relevant than my 11 years of service on the Minnetonka School Board and my 6 years of service on the Association of Metropolitan School District's Board of Directors. My role as a board member has been to take the skills I learned in business as well as the nonprofit sector to apply them in an educational setting. In Minnetonka, I've been elected by my peers as treasurer, vice chair, and chair, a role I've held for 3 years and I'm currently the chair for 2017. At AMSD, I was elected to the governing board and became chair of the executive governing board of that organization. What I believe is that great public education is dependent upon vision, strong leadership, and the courage to do what is right for students. 15 years ago, Minnetonka was not what it is today. Our board drafted a vision for excellence with a belief that kids were capable of more and deserved better from us as an institution. We made a commitment to focus on doing what is right for students. We hired a strong leader in our superintendent. As board chair, I led the board to establish annual goals for the district to achieve the vision and ensure that we invested our resources in the things that matter. Our board has supported and held our superintendent accountable as he leads his team to achieve this vision and the goals. All of this has meant a lot of change for our staff and for our community, and it has taken courage to persevere through staff resistance and public comment. But the end result is that today, academic rigor has been accelerated, staff have been attracted, engaged, and retained, innovative new programs have been developed, and students rank at the top of the state, national, and world measures by any measurement. Because we focused on creating and offering excellent opportunities for students to excel, Minnetonka is now a school district of choice. I believe at the University of Minnesota, the role of regent should be probably very similar to that of a school board member, although it's a much, much larger scale than what I've experienced. The same qualities and skills, though, that have made me successful in my business career, my experience in nonprofits, and in education will serve the university well. I understand and have an experience what it means to govern, not manage. I have experience in how to make decisions and make investments that create growth and positive results. I understand and have experience in how a board can create a vision, work through administrators to change a system to meet the needs of students and the community. And I understand and have experience in how to withstand public scrutiny in times of change and leadership. Most importantly, I have a passion for educating students. I have a commitment to results, excellence, innovation, and a focus on doing what is right for kids. It would be an honor and a privilege to give back to this institution and the state as a regent for the University of Minnesota. So I thank you for the opportunity, and I look forward to answering your questions.
Thank you very much. Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Langseth, from a big picture perspective, what do you see as the most significant challenge facing the University of Minnesota today?
That's a great question. I actually wrote down a couple of things. I think the number one thing is the University of Minnesota is, I would call, the economic engine for the state of Minnesota potentially. As everyone knows, we have a demographic issue in this state where we're going to have a dearth of people to work. And the University of Minnesota has a great obligation and responsibility to create graduates that can go out and fill those voids. And so I think how the university does that is critical. And I think there's some opportunities to consider that I would think about specifically. Taking a look at what the student experience is. First of all, we need to attract kids. I come from a district where less than half of the students that graduate go to school in the state of Minnesota, and even less than that go to the University of Minnesota. I think that's a shame. I think we need to retain our top talent in this state so that we have a workforce that is capable of moving things forward. So student experience becomes a key, important piece of that, and that experience is in how things happen in the university as well as the academic experience that they have. So the focus, I believe, needs to be on that. What is right for the students? Focus on making sure that everything that this university does in terms of instruction, opportunity, experience is outstanding, and then make sure that they have the support around them to be successful. And then get out of here in 4 years. We don't want them here in 6 years, I don't think. I, as a parent, I didn't make an investment to have my kid be here in 6 years. I wanted them out in four. So that would be the biggest vision, I guess.
Questions? Margaret?
You mentioned that in Minnetonka there was staff resistance.
Yep.
Can you share the example of what that was, how you overcame it, and the role that you played?
I can. I'll give it. In 15 years, we've done a lot. I will just start out with that. And a lot, it's all been academic programs. One of the most significant ones I would talk about is immersion. We elected to do immersion, language immersion in our schools about 9 years ago now. And when we did that, we made a decision that the school would become half language, a different language, and half English, because we felt that the community valued their community schools. That created great angst and resistance in the staff for two reasons. Number one, many of them didn't speak Chinese or Spanish, and they didn't understand how they would even have jobs. And so immediately they were resistant to the new program we were putting into place. We made a commitment that no staff would lose their job as a result of this program. And over time, through a natural attrition, we've moved in really wonderful teachers in Spanish and Chinese to fill the roles of those places. The second place they had resistance was they felt that it created two communities, that there were immersion families and there were language families, and that created haves and have-nots in their minds. As board members and administrators, that wasn't the case. We knew we were supporting all of them in the best way. It was more a parent perception that if I made a choice to keep my kid in English and not in Spanish, that I may have done the wrong thing. So creating lots of support mechanisms at the building level to make sure that those communities were coming together, that kids' needs were being met, was really, really critical. And then the third place was the fact that parents and teachers were very concerned that their kids wouldn't understand English. And what would that mean to their academic results long term? And so we made an investment at the third grade level. The kids were not exposed at all to English from day one. They went to school in kindergarten, and Miss Jones only spoke Chinese. She never spoke English. But in third grade, they were exposed for the first time to English. And we put in additional resources there for children that perhaps did not have success mastering the English language at that point in time, with the intent that long-term they would be fine. What we know today is, by any measure, all of our children are performing at the same level or farther than they ever were. So we don't see any break in differentiation in success with kids that are in immersion or language English programs. Staff are fine because they've seen, we've moved through this time now. They know that they've been able to retain their jobs. And the community piece, I will say, still sometimes rears its little head, but overall, it's gone very, very well. Hope that answered your question.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Oh, there's a little luck involved, I have to say, sometimes.
Mayor, can I just add just one comment to that? The biggest language immersion program in the country. Mm-hmm. It's really remarkable.
Yeah, over half of our students are in language immersion to this day. 60%, roughly, 60 to 70% by school enroll in immersion. Yes.
You started that when? What's the duration of time so far from first year you put it in place until now?
It's been 9 years. So these kids are now moving into becoming juniors this next fall. So we started at K-1, if I remember my additions right. So
okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Rick.
Thank you. You talked about getting your kids out in 4 years, and I have two in college, so I appreciate where you're coming from. One of the most important pieces of that has been concurrent enrollment college in the schools. Concurrent enrollment, where I believe we have more demand for university programs than the U can provide, but also being constrained by the Higher Learning Commission's new rules on having to have a master's in order to teach at the high school level. Can you give me your thoughts on concurrent enrollment and what you would like to bring to that program as a region?
Okay, I don't know the definition of concurrent enrollment, so I have to pledge or
plead
ignorance.
High school and college credit.
Oh, the PSEO program.
Advanced placement.
PSEO, college in the schools.
Okay, yep, thank you. Well, my opinion is this. I think that kids should be pushed as far as they can be pushed. And I don't mean that in a ramming it, but I think kids have more opportunity and potential than we ever have dreamed. We have children that have taken the SAT test in third grade and have mastered core subjects. They have more brain power than you could ever imagine. Our average ACT score is the top in the state and the country. And so we've done that through that. AP and IB specifically at our school are critically important. We have made a commitment as a district to invest in those. Other districts have chosen not to, and they go the route of PSEO. And so they've created relationships with Hennepin County Tech. They may have to have relationships with a few different organizations. But all of those provide the opportunity for kids to expand their learning and move forward. There are kids that have incredibly high aptitudes for things in science or mathematics or language, whatever it might be, and to hold them back isn't right. I think we need to let them go. Now, what does that mean for the University of Minnesota? My kid came in as a second semester sophomore because of what he did. Interestingly, he needed 4 years to graduate because he took a program that had a lot of pieces to it, but it allowed him to really be able to focus that on that and take some other things. Kids aren't ready at age 18 to know exactly what they want to do, and I'm grateful he didn't graduate in 4 years because I don't know that he would have done the right thing. So when kids come in with those extra credits, it allows them to do a little bit more exploration, perhaps, than they might have otherwise been able to do. And I think that's a positive as well. You had a second piece to your question.
Well, concurrent. As a region, about the college and the schools program and the actions by the HLC, by the Higher Learning Commission, and Mr. Chair, I think I have a follow-up after
mm-hmm.
that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I would be supportive of it because I think it's important for kids to have the opportunity to excel. And so, go ahead.
You did mention the extra credits and that your son needed 4 years to get through. Not every student has that ability,
right.
and how would you as a region then work to try to make it so that more students graduated in 4 years in order to keep their debt levels down college affordable?
Yeah. I think how a system puts support mechanisms in place for students is really, really critical. I have two kids that also went to private school, so I have the interesting perspective of both sides of the coin, I guess. And A private school experience has a little different involvement in terms of hands-on with kids. Some of that's good, some of that's not good. But I think that the University of Minnesota, what it could do is figure out how to help kids craft their path, make sure that they're making very specific choices in terms of how they get through. I think sometimes they fill out their course selection and they don't recognize what they may have set themselves up for 4 years down the road, and then they have to recreate. Or perhaps, as they came out of high school, they didn't have an understanding of what their real skills and abilities are, and they're going down a path that really isn't them, and so they redirect. So the University of Minnesota can partner back with the public institutions in the high schools and help those institutions prepare kids more fully to be prepared to come to the U. And then I think once those kids come to the U, they can really partner with children through counselors, support, whatever it might be, to make sure they're choosing the right programs moving forward. And when they have failure, help them make some different choices and move forward so they're out in 4 years.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Other questions? Jerry.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by your school district. You described having this high performance, high academic standing, and the students test above many students in the country or overall, yet very few go to the university.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering why. So where's the disconnect here? Why doesn't the university recruit people and get them into their programs that are well qualified, or is somebody else being more competitive in recruiting?
That's a good question. I don't have an answer to that. What I can say is what kids are looking for is experiences that allow them to pursue their dreams, whatever they might be. And for whatever reason, the University of Minnesota has not been on that radar. Now, it is in some areas, like engineering. It's a very top perceived school, and so kids look at that very favorably. Kids that are thinking about medical school see the biomedical sciences as a very, very strong place. I'd have to survey them all to understand exactly what the rationale is. But when I look at where they're going to the coasts. And they're going west and they're going east, and they're going to private institutions in large places like UCLA or NYU, where they really feel that their opportunities are going to be met. Personally, I believe we've got a fabulous institution right here that costs a whole lot less than those that they aren't taking advantage of. It's the same thing that we experience in Minnetonka with parents that send their kids to private school. For some reason, they have the mindset that private school is better for their child, and in some cases it is for different reasons. But there's a wonderful education that's free, that their kids could get every bit as wonderful education. But sometimes it's just the mindset of the person. But I think what the U can do about that is I think there's some very specific communications things and marketing things that can be done to kids and to schools that would raise the perception of what's possible at the University of Minnesota, the opportunities that kids have within the community, within education, all of that, because it's a great institution. Yes.
Harriet.
Thank you for being here. I'm interested in your very busy life, and I'm interested in how you would approach assimilating into the role of a regent. Can you talk about that a little bit and any other obligations that you might have that might?
Sure, absolutely. First of all, I'm not employed, so I have the luxury of being able to pick and choose how I spend my time, gratefully to my husband. But what I've chosen to do is to invest my time in places that matter, and it's been primarily focused on kids. Today, what I have been doing is working with a group called the Open Hands Foundation, where a year ago now, we opened up a home for youth in crisis, and we've served over 400 kids this last year. We're the fundraisers. We're the vision behind it. We're not the program managers. My board work, the school board, certainly is the largest piece of my time right now. Because I've been on it for 12 years, any of you who've been on a board for that long, and I guess you would know particularly Senator Pratt, it isn't as complicated as it was on day one. You've gone through this a little bit, you know a little bit more about it. So I can quickly understand what's going on. It doesn't require as much of my time. In terms of assimilation, I think it would be very much like what I did as a school board. There's a lot to learn. And meeting with the experts in those areas where I can, starting with the president and then working through different areas, would be the way to do it. I have to learn. I have to be in learning mode. I have to listen. I have to understand what the issues are. I have to understand what the legislators are looking for, what schools are looking for, what kids need. And then at meetings, I have to be prepared. So really going through the materials that come forth, when I have questions, going back, getting the background so that I know what's going on at the table so I can be additive. Otherwise, I'm just a participant with no impact. So personally, when I make a commitment, I'm all in. And I will do whatever it takes to make sure that I'm knowledgeable and aware of what the issues are, and that I can make good decisions on behalf of the students, the institution, and the state.
Thank you.
Our member who is a student and chose to come here, Theo, has a question.
He chose to come. That's a big thing.
Thank you for being here today. So my question has to do a little bit about what you mentioned with environment. At the University of Minnesota, we have a very difficult environment today with campus speech. Speech on campus, not only academic freedom from the professor's point of view, but students as well. And there are a lot of there's a really passionate discussion about whether or not speech should be, if from my biased point of view, shut down, or if it should be allowed to continue. What, in your opinion, should the administration do in that respect? What institute, or what should this institution of higher education support?
That's a good question. I think what you're seeing with students and your friends is very the same thing that's happening around the society right now. I think there's a lot happening, and there's a lot of opinions going on. And I think that respectful discourse is critical. I think free speech is our right, but how you do it is what matters. And so I think that the administration's responsibility is to create venues or environments so that respectful discourse can indeed occur. Regents, the president, administration need to understand student perspectives. And the reverse is true, too, in order to come to a common decision on something. I think when people can align behind a belief or a higher level thing, they can quickly work through the issues. So I think that that's really, really critically important. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So a really good example of this situation occurred earlier this year when there was an incident with the build with our Washington Avenue Bridge panels. The College Republicans decided to paint build the wall, and that caused a really big issue. And the university took great steps to encourage discourse on that issue. Mm-hmm. However, there was a situation when President Kaler hosted this discourse where it was completely hijacked by a massive protest, and there was really no discourse. There was a one-sided scolding of the administration and students who had condoned that act. How would you handle a situation like that? What do you think the regent's role in a situation like that should be?
The regent's role is to really expect that we create an opportunity for respectful dialogue. That's where it starts. So what are the parameters around that? What are the institutional supports or meetings or interactions that have to occur in order for that to happen? I can't specifically identify what happened in that instance, but we have students, we have staff, we have community members in Minnetonka who do this. And the first thing to do is to sit and listen and understand what the perspective is. And then it's an asking for communication, because the other side needs to be heard too. And then how do you come together? So I think the regent's role is to expect that the respectful discourse would occur and that systems are put in place to ensure that that occurs.
Thank you. Lois?
You mentioned at the beginning of your comments that you have been a metro person for the majority of your life. Talk with me, if you would please, about your understanding at the present time of the coordinate campuses of the university and of the role of the university throughout the state of Minnesota.
That's a great question. I understand there are 5 campuses. I've investigated them, looked at their data, understand a little bit about it. I guess I kind of liken it to running a business with locations in lots of different places. The small business I ran had a location in Seattle or in San Francisco, for example. Or when I worked for Dayton Hudson, we had 36 stores across 5 states. The first thing you have to do is make sure you know what your value and make sure that everybody in that organization understands what you value, because the University of Minnesota is a brand that delivers an experience to meet the needs of the state of Minnesota and the students that it serves. So that is the primary responsibility, I think, of the University of Minnesota. As a regent, creating those expectations, that vision for what it is critical, and then holding the president and his team accountable for that. But I also believe as a regent, you need to be there. You need to visit those spaces and understand at those schools what's going on, what are the issues that are being faced, what are students experiencing, what are staff experiencing, so that when you come back to the table to make decisions, you have some knowledge and insight around what's going on, so you can make the best decisions for those areas. Well, I lived in the metropolitan area for all but 4 years. For the 4 years, I lived in Des Moines, Iowa, the seat of agriculture. And so I have a little bit of understanding around food and all of that, and have a belief around the need for food and agriculture, and that's a big piece of what the university does and should do. The feeding of the world's people is critically important, and in industry in Minnesota, that's a critically important piece of what we do. So just as an example.
Thank you.
Lois?
You mentioned ag, and yes, that whole arena is becoming increasingly important,
yep.
And it's interfacing with our medical arena, which
yep.
is more metro in nature. But you have time within Best Buy.
Yes.
So from a technology perspective and breaking new ground and the like, in the technology arena, you also have experience with early stage companies.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about, if you would please, the university's role in technology development, and then taking it back to the previous question, how that technology development role can reach into communities that are not just in our metro mecca, as I would say.
So with the campuses. So you're talking specifically
about instruction. Not just our campuses, but into the 80 counties that are not
yeah.
the seven county metro areas.
Yeah, you're
so.
Talking about instruction specifically, right?
No, or I'm talking more about commercialization of technology
Got
and
it.
Economic development. And so how as a regent might you steer, shape, raise discussion?
Well, number one, the world has changed a lot, as we all know. I was at Best Buy before the iPhone.
What's that
came
again?
Out. and went through the whole evolution and integration of the iPhone and all that Apple product. So we went from nothing to a lot in a very short time. In Minnetonka, we went from chalkboards to now we are doing online learning. So there's a vast array. I think it's, as a region, it's understanding what tools and what technologies can achieve the end game that we have to have. It's what we do. Technology is not something that you consider buying and thinking about how you use. It's the way the world runs. And so utilizing the tool to make sure that we can accelerate things is critically important. In the line of food preparation, understanding and the research that the university can do around how do you get more out of your crops, or how do you create sustainable farms, or how do you make sure that your footprint in the community that you're living is positive, can all be driven from technology. And the you can be a leader in developing those technologies and understanding how to use them, and then partner in rolling them out through their campuses and through the technology they can use, the websites, different podcasts, or whatever it might be that reach people out in those communities. So it should be a hugely valuable resource. I use it for my garden. And use it all the time to understand different plants. That's a simple thing, but as a consumer, I can go and I can readily get information to help me do what I need to do. That's the role the university needs to play and should play and does, and just continue to accelerate it.
Other questions?
Well, I'll ask my
right.
standard question. This is the second step in a multi-step process.
Yeah.
And if your name is forwarded on Friday, mm-hmm. there will be an expectation that you knock on doors of 201 legislators,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to need to sell yourself in a very short time,
yeah.
but also listen to what their concerns are.
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing and prepared to commit to the next 2 months to doing that?
I wouldn't be here if I wasn't. I actually ran through an endorsing campaign through for a House of Representatives seat, so I have a lot of knowledge around what it takes to knock on doors and try and win votes. I went door to door in my district to gain the support of the endorsing convention, and I did it many, many times over the course of 3 months. So I get what that's about. It's really important. I know people in the legislature, and I hope that they will help me. But it comes down to me being able to succinctly tell my tale, listen to what they have to need, and close the deal in 5 minutes. And if I get more, that'd be great. But I can do it hopefully in 5 minutes. So, yes, the answer is yes.
Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Langseth, right now there's been, and this seems to be my question of the day, there's been a lot of attention on the scandal, the situation with regard to the football team. Mm-hmm. In your view, what is the role of the regent in that particular situation, and how would you see yourself as part of that team, and not just that one, but in other issues that seem to follow the university? You know, any time something like this happens, of course, the reputation of the university
is tarnished.
Yeah, is suffering.
Yeah, yeah. And that's really unfortunate. I guess I know well enough that no matter what these circumstances are, there's always two sides to every story. So I don't know the backdrop of all of this. What I do know is this, is as a school board member, which would be as a regent, my job is to make sure that we hire the very best talent possible. And when we hire the best talent, then we need to set them up for success. We need to tell them what are the values we have as an organization and what are the expectations that we have of you in what you're going to do and in terms of how you're going to work with students. And then we need to hold them accountable and work with them. There may be pieces around student support or policy or departmental things that can shift to support different things that pop up. And regents need to be looking at those and work with the president and his administration to put those into place. But when it happens, it's all about making sure, looking into what's happened and understanding both sides. You've got a staff member and you've got students, and different things are happening there. Obviously, some actions were taken on students. We don't understand what those were. The staff is involved, and you have to be clear. The president has the responsibility for that. It's his job. It's not the regent's job. The regent's job is to make sure that it's done right and to make sure that it's done swiftly within concordance of what the policies and procedures are of the institution. And then ultimately, the regents hopefully are a body that are united behind the institution and the students that it serves. And so to speak with one voice is really, really critical in times like that, because they can add fuel to the fire if they don't. I have experience with that in Minnetonka. We had a very high-profile basketball coach 2 years ago that unfortunately we had to separate from. And it was not pretty, and it was not comfortable. But it wasn't. There were some issues with the student. And we worked through it, and it was the right thing to do. And we had to understand, certainly from our superintendent, what happened. But once we could do that, we could get behind him and move forward and then provide the support that was necessary for the student.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Jim?
Speaking of standard questions, the relationship with the university, regents and legislators is critical. First of all, you carry a very impressive and well-regarded name around here. How are you related to Keith?
I don't think we are.
Oh, darn.
I could ask him.
I thought you might have been. Okay,
no.
Well, anyway.
Well, maybe way back in Norway, but right. I wouldn't be, because I'm a Keith, actually. I'm married into the legs of that. So.
Okay. What about your first relationship with your own state senator, your own state representative? What talk to us about that?
It's been very good. I actually have one sitting here in the room. In the 12 years I've been on the board, that's been really important to nurture those relationships and to understand what issues they're facing. We've really seen our role in working through our superintendent to helping them understand what the issues are that we're facing in our district, and then to equip them with information so that they can make decisions. We're also very clear to say, here are the top things that could really make a difference. I mean, we all have a laundry list, right? But really it comes down to this. So through Minnetonka School District and then AMSD. AMSD is the lobbying organizations for all the public schools in the metropolitan area, 36 school districts. I chaired that organization, so development of a legislative platform was critically important there. And it's meetings, one-on-one, talking. We hold a coffee for our legislators every January where we meet with them, and then as needed we communicate with them. Relationship matters, focus matters.
Could I have a follow-up?
Sure, sure.
You noted, for the 3rd Congressional District where there are two incumbents, as you well know. You chose not to check the box for at-large. Would you talk to us about that decision?
I sat at my desk and wondered what I should do. And I thought, well, the bottom line is I live in the 3rd Congressional District, so that seems to make sense. About as scientific as that. I had nothing to do with who was running, who was there. I don't know the person who's the current regent. This, from my perspective, is no reflection on them at all, because I don't really know them. I just have an interest in serving, and felt that I could represent, obviously, the state. It wouldn't be representing just that congressional district, but that made sense that I came from there.
Thank you. Jerry.
I want to tag on Senator Bonnet's question a little bit.
Yeah.
And this specifically has to do with the images portrayed by the media and the press. Currently, it has to do with athletics, but there's been several other instances over the past few years where the, you know, the majority of the people in the state only know what about the university is what they read in the press.
Yep.
So how you as a regent handle that issue with the press?
Well, I think it starts out with the relationships that the university creates with the press. So having marketing communications are critically important. It's something that I actually love doing and am good at. You have to have relationships with the people. So that if you're the editor at the Star writing the sports page, I can call you up and say, hey, here's what's going on. I want to talk to you about this so that you know what's happening and get them in the know about what's happening. Because I do think there's a result that if they know you, and they understand what's going on, and I mean you globally as an institution and personally, they have a tendency to be a little bit more graceful in the way they handle information. When they don't know you or they have a difference of opinion with you, they can often be challenging. As a regent, I can play a role in that, where I have relationships or build relationships if it makes sense, but the communications department with you needs to decide where that makes sense and how they would leverage somebody like me. In terms of comment, sometimes the media asks the regents or the leadership for comment. It's really important to have talking points or points of view that collectively the organization believes in, and as a regent to have a voice in those as they're created so that I can honestly go forward to support those. But I think as a regent, my job is to support the University of Minnesota and its students. And at the end of the day, this is an icky one because it's got a lot of stuff going on in it. And getting to the most important thing would be to get to the truth and take swift action and move forward.
Mm-hmm. Harriet.
So I'm going to tag on to this a little bit too. Do you believe that it is appropriate for an individual regent to have contact with the press, or is there a different mechanism for that?
That's a great question. So I can only talk based upon a school board member. As a school board member, I work through my communications department. If there's a time when I'm contacted by the press, I will go to see what they know about the situation. There's oftentimes stuff I don't know about what's going on. And it's important for me to understand what's going about, and if it makes sense for me to interact at that point, I do. I don't initiate that on my own. I don't believe that that's right for the institution. But I also have very comfortable doing it, so if it makes sense for me to be utilized in that way, absolutely can. But my job is to do what's right for the Minnetonka School District, not to do things that would undo what we've done. So it's how you play it, I guess is the best word. Would I go out and seek it? Heck no. No, not a chance.
Well, I have a question here that you've been on the school board for 12 years, and so there's been certainly situations that personally and where you've had either success or failures. Have you any experience that you wish you had taken a different stance?
Oh, golly, that's a good question. I don't know that I do. This is going to be terrible to say. I've been really, really careful in how I've moved through things. When I ran my campaigns, that was probably the most challenging thing I'd done because I quickly found out that I thought I was okay and I thought I was a nice person, but other people didn't think that way. And that was really kind of a tough thing to go through, candidly. And so I was naive to that. And you learn to develop a pretty thick skin but a soft heart for things, and that's been really important. One of the most challenging things that we have is when parents come to us and want something changed, and I know it's not going to be changed. I had an individual that I spent 3.5 hours with who really wanted me as the school board chair to change spring break from the April date to early February because her family wanted to go skiing. And I'm like, okay, I'm listening. I'm trying to do everything I can to listen. I'm like, you know, our job is to really make sure that we make decisions that are academically sound for kids. And I tried for 3.5 hours. And finally, at the end of it, I said, you know, I'm really sorry. We're going to agree to disagree. And she said, well, who can I go to? I said, the governor. What? I'm like, that's kind of who's next. And I wish I wouldn't have said that. But, I mean, that was the truth. And, you know, you can't please everybody. You just can't. And I think that my role has been truly to listen, to be kind, but to uphold the institution and what we're trying to do time and time and time again.
Thank you.
Yep.
Time for you now to make any closing comments you'd like to.
Well, thank you for that. First of all, thank you for what you're doing. This is a big job, and the University of Minnesota is a really, really important piece of our state, and I appreciate you really taking the time to choose the right people. I'm excited about the opportunity. As I mentioned, I have a passion for kids, and I have a long-term love of and passion for the University of Minnesota. I believe that my skills and the activities and the experiences I've had have prepared me well to serve in this role. I believe in education. It is the pathway and the right for people, the ability for people to do well in this world. And the University of Minnesota plays an incredible role for individual people, as well as for the driver of opportunity for the state by the people that it educates. And this institution needs to be successful in all that it does. And I would just treasure the opportunity to be a part of that, to take my expertise in innovation and strategy and governance and education and all of those things and put it to work in this way, if it makes sense as you look at all the candidates. So I just want to say thank you for the opportunity. You've got on my piece of paper contact information. If you'd like to contact me, I welcome that. I would be happy to. And Terry, I thank you for doing the background work on me and for all of you listening to me today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too. Good luck with what you're doing, you guys.